Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're continuing on with our recollections series today and talking to Will Rubenstein about one of his favorite players, who's Bernard Pierce, the running back who played fairly briefly for the Ravens from 2012 to 14. But Will, thanks for joining me. First time on the show, right?
Yes, first time, but definitely a longtime fan. I've been embedded in Patriot Nation as an expatriate, no pun intended, Baltimorean, since the year 2000. So I feel like Tom Brady and I arrived in New England the same year, and luckily we'll get to talk about some happy times as a Ravens fan in New England tonight, thanks to Bernard Pierce.
All right. Well, certainly Bernard Pierce had some moments against New England in that AFC Championship game. First of all, talk a little bit about why you selected Bernard Pierce as opposed to some other player in the series.
Well, as I was getting excited for this year's playoff run, I decided it'd be fun to take a little trip back in memory lane. And my wife likes to make fun of me for having DVDs still. And I have DVDs from the 2013 playoff run. So I decided I'd like to watch. And Bernard Pierce just jumped out from the wild card game and certainly the AFC Championship game and even a couple of big plays in the Super Bowl. I really just, around the same time you had mentioned this series, thought, here's a guy who doesn't get a lot of recognition, but really had a huge impact in a very important season in Ravens history.
Sure did. Third round pick of the Ravens that year. A lot of people don't remember how high the Ravens drafted Bernard Pierce, and they kind of wonder, sometimes based on a short tenure, just how late they draft him. Number 84 overall. You know, he was 6'0", 218, so big back. Ran a 4.49 40, you know, so tested well, obviously, and was a guy they thought of highly. Super Bowl ring, obviously, right there as a rookie, and that was his best year. He certainly made big contributions throughout the playoffs.
He did, and, you know, I think that particular draft, just if we could take a second to talk about it, will certainly be remembered mostly for the undrafted free agent who will be a Hall of Famer, namely Justin Tucker. But in terms of that draft, I happened to look at it as we were getting ready for this episode, and it made me really appreciate how much even guys like Courtney Upshaw and Kelechi Asemele really contributed to the Ravens that year. But actually, the Ravens traded up to get Bernard Pierce. They thought highly enough of him, and I think as a compliment, like you were saying earlier, such a different size speed than Ray Rice, and that's part of what we'll get to discuss tonight is how well he got used as a compliment. And of course, he had Vontae Leach in there as well. So you really had three very different running backs that all had big contributions that season.
They even in the pre-Jackson era, the Ravens did a pretty good job of having a variety of stylistic backs that they would use. LaRon McClain and McGahee and Rice together is kind of a classic three-headed monster. And ever since then, at least, they've done that. Even if you want to go back to that, I'm watching the 1996 and 1997 wins again to kind of remember some of the big players, the big plays of players who will come up hopefully in pre-2000 players of this series. And Bam Morris and Ernest Biner were a fairly different group in 1996 too. So yeah, it's really been for longer, I think, than people would guess. It's been a big part of how the Ravens have operated offensively.
Yeah, I mean, and that through line continued. I mean, even as we get into the end of his very brief stint with the Ravens, Bernard Pierce, I mean, we saw, unfortunately, with what happened to Ray Rice, the Ravens went sort of all in on Justin Forsett, but they had Kyle Juszczyk. So, you know, that through line just continued. And, you know, certainly as much as I want everybody to stay on the Ravens as we flash forward to 2024, you know, the different kinds of backs we had this season with Keaton Mitchell and Gus and Justice Hill, and of course, some, you know, some folks who we picked up along the way, we're not always beholden to one lead back that carries 30 times a game. I mean, Jamal Lewis may have a word or two about that, but it's been a pretty, when you start thinking about Ravens running back history, complementary running backs seem to make a big difference and have.
Yeah. Chester Taylor was very complimentary back to what Jamal Lewis did too. So even though Jamal got most of the carries, obviously back then that was a nice, he was a good player. When you look at Pierce's, let's take the bad news first, because Pierce's career with the Ravens, not particularly impressive in total, 3.8 yards per carry, 3.9 yards per target, which is really bad. So, you have a guy who's not really going to be on the field for a lot of passing downs with those kind of numbers. Now, Flacco, a check down guy who presumably would have been able to use Pierce in some ways. He certainly used Rice very effectively. But I think if you're looking for the good news, he had only one fumble ever in his
career. Exactly right. Yes.
But the really bad number, 38.8% career success rate. Now, I was interested by this and actually surprised at how low Ray Rice's career success rate was. It was only 42.6%. And that's the Football Outsiders success rate based on keeping your team on target in terms of down and distance. So you have to get a certain percentage of the yards by down to do that. But last year, for Gus Edwards for his career is at 57.4%. So very different the Ravens style now, and obviously benefiting from Jackson, benefiting from a good offensive line that has supported the run well.
You know, without going through every carry in his illustrious career, I always felt like with Bernard Pierce, not only was it a compliment, as we've already discussed, but he did seem to pick up certain first downs in certain situations. And I don't want to overstate it, but, you know, he was a man that, you know, wasn't afraid to pick up a first down when needed. And as we're going to come to talk about, you know, as great a player as Ray Rice was, he could fumble the football.
Yep.
And there were some very specific times, as we'll get to the playoffs, where certainly John Harbaugh was not afraid to say, if you're fumbling, you're not carrying the ball. And Bernard Pierce, in those circumstances, really stepped up. Because there was, he wasn't going to give the ball to Vontae Leach more than once or twice a game, God willing. So it is interesting you bring that up. But I guess I'm trying to focus on the positive, Ken. But I do get that as someone who had a very brief Ravens career and spent a tiny bit of time in Jacksonville and bounced around, I think, with the Broncos maybe, he really sort of shot out as a very super, like a supernova in that rookie season.
Yeah. Vontae Leach, I was thinking he was the guy, but I must have the wrong player. Because I thought he had two fumbles in three carries. But that's just not the case. And I'm looking at Houston. He had some carries. Oh, no, that's him as a receiver. Yeah, it's two fumbles and three carries for Vontae Leach before he came to Baltimore. He carried the ball for Baltimore 32 times, but he fumbled the ball and had one fumble. But two and three with Houston. That's if you're talking percentages, I doubt you'll get much higher than that. You mentioned he was done after Jacksonville. He was there in 2015 after the Ravens released him as a year four player, six carries with Jackson, then he was done. What is it you remember stylistically about him?
Well, he didn't really mess around, which I really respected. Ray Rice could obviously run one way, get into trouble, and have the speed and the body agility. And the lean to get out of trouble. Whereas Bernard Pierce, he was looking for a hole and then he was going to hit it. The good news is he was bigger than Ray Rice, and he wasn't afraid, and Ray Rice certainly wasn't afraid to put his shoulder down and get into it. But I always appreciated his ability, and they would run him to the ends, left end, right end. So they weren't afraid that he wasn't just an up the middle kind of guy. Much more of a one cut. Let's get in the hole. And let's get going.
Yeah.
And those are my memories of him. And as you already mentioned, he wasn't a pass catcher. That was not what he was there for. In fact, one of the strengths of him, maybe not a strength. I think if you're game planning against the Ravens, you didn't quite have to worry about him out of the backfield.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. Had a really good, the thing I remember about him probably more than the other things is how well he ran through contact as a rookie. Had a bunch of missed tackles forced. But like everything pretty much in the rest of his career, dropped off pretty dramatically. I was looking at his yards after contact, and it's one of the stats, by the way, I look at with a jaundiced eye, to use an IRS term. I am not confident those values are calculated consistently from year to year by even the same service. Okay. But I did notice, and I tried to use the PFF numbers in this case, that he'd had a higher yards after contact than Edwards did in 2018, where Edwards was really remarkable in that respect in his rookie year. Pierce was even higher than that in 2012. So impressive, you know, to start with. And the yards per carry are not quite as good. I guess it means that the contact was coming at a similar point. So that line must have been giving us a good level two opportunities to start with.
Yeah. Again, as a player, and this is why I'm so glad you brought up this series, as a player that just didn't really last very long as a Raven, but certainly had an impact in some very big occasions, most of my memories of him are being such a great complement to Ray Rice at a time, whether it was Ray Rice's own doing through his fumbling, or through necessity in terms of game situation, injuries, Ray Rice needed a break, things like that, that Bernard Pierce really was just one of those players that if you really stop and look at the way he produced in certain moments, I would say if I were someone like him, having a Super Bowl ring and making a pretty big impact in not just that playoffs, but he did score a touchdown two seasons later against the Steelers. And as a Raven, scoring against the Steelers is always a good thing, especially when you win in Heinz Field. I would hope he could look back on his time very fondly without having any idea, my apologies for poor research, about what he is currently doing. I did try to figure that out. And I don't know if that's part of this series, Ken, and I apologize to put you on the spot.
No, but, it does not have to be. You know, this is really about his time as a player, but if you happen to want to dwell on that or happen to know him after the game, after his career, that'd be fine.
He did go to a very interesting high school. he actually went to a school that was actually a reformatory school, and started that way. It was actually sort of like a Philadelphia school for boys out in the county, and rose up and then was recruited and, of course, got to go to Temple where he shone. But so I found that interesting, but I was never really able to find out the sort of what happened. Maybe that's a whole nother series of podcasts, Ken. Where are they now?
It is, and I want to do more of those. I want to do some of those with the players. I never heard, and sometimes I hear about these things, that Pierce's Super Bowl ring was for sale, which is a good thing. It might have mean he'd have been able to hang on to it. Made about $2.7 million playing the game. Of course, that can go through your hands pretty quickly when you've got a high income level and you expect to be earning for a while. And, it's just my first deal. I'll be around for much longer. But that seems to be part of what people want out of the where are they now? And I'd like to focus on something a little more positive than that, in terms of how things went and what they're doing there. There's some great stories out there about Ravens and what they're doing now. And Trevor Price apparently is making some sort of learning software. And who is it? Chris Carr, the defensive back, is apparently an immigration attorney now. And he shows up in court and nobody believes he used to play in the NFL.
Holy smokes.
There's definitely some cool stories out there, and I've going back to some of these players and finding them, they often have very ordinary jobs. I mean, I'll give you one more. Marty Domrays, he was a quarterback for the Colts in the 70s, who actually replaced John Unitas. He is a financial advisor out in, I think, in California now somehow. But I've occasionally tried to contact him on Twitter or tag him on Twitter with some comment I'm making about how he's often been quoted on ESPN as saying, that was the greatest moment of my career, getting hurt so John Unitas could replace me to go in and throw his last touchdown pass for the Colts. Yeah.
I mean, anybody over a certain age who was ever a Colts fan would appreciate that. Yeah.
I hope we're able to get more X players on. It's something I'm going to try and do this off season. Take us through maybe some of your thoughts about some of the big plays you remember from Bernard Pierce.
Sure. I would say, I just want to, if we can just take a, just go into the 2013 playoffs. And that's really where he made a lot of hay. And now,
I want to stop you for a second. That's the 2012 playoffs to every other Ravens fan out there.
Oh, sorry. You're right. Yeah, but, you're right. Yeah. My apologies. 2012 playoffs in the year 2013. So let's just say January and February of 2013, the 2012 playoffs. He was actually in that home wildcard game against the Colts. He actually rushed for 103 yards on 13 carries. And Ray Rice was only 15 for 68, and he had a big catch, a 47-yard catch, but he lost two fumbles. And specifically, in the fourth quarter, after Ray Rice had his second lost fumble of the game, and then Vinatieri missed a field goal, which was nice because it would have cut it to 17-12, he helped set up a really important touchdown, the most important touchdown, the one that went from 17-9 to 24-9. And he had three big carries for 40 yards in that drive. Specifically, a third and one. He had a third and one run from our 39 for 43 yards all the way down to the Indianapolis 18. And then, of course, one of those classic Flacco to Bolden touchdowns happened very shortly after, as many Ravens fans know from that postseason. So to me, it was sort of that decisive drive in that wild card game was the first of what would become more, especially when we get to the New England game. And even the Super Bowl, there was a couple plays that stuck out to me.
Yeah, that huge run on third and one, because obviously not only did get him the first down, keep the ball away, it also led almost immediately, I think it was two plays later, to a touchdown by Bolden that was really great catch by Bolden in the right corner of the end zone that a lot of people probably have a visual memory. There's a lot of memory of Bolden going up in the middle between the goalposts on the kind of zipper routes. Yeah. But this is on the right side of the end zone where he took the ball away from the Colts defender. Just very impressive catch there. But also, the Indianapolis was still calling their timeouts down 15 when the Ravens had the ball at the 2-minute warning. And with one.
No, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. Yeah, I apologize. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up because he basically ended the game by himself. As I was looking back through it and watching some of it, he had three carries for 17 yards and, you know, he basically caused Indianapolis to call its final timeout. And even despite, or the next to last timeout, and despite the 2-minute warning, third and six in the Baltimore 41, Indianapolis still had a timeout. He runs for 13 yards, game over. Flacco kneels twice. And I know if you're a rookie and you're icing a playoff game, that's a pretty good place to be. And again, you're not Ray Rice, but as we've seen throughout Ravens history and certainly with John Harbaugh, if you fumble the football, you are not in a good place. And luckily the Ravens had a guy like this.
Now I'm not 100% sure about this because they played, I think, two snaps of victory formation, but I think Bernard Pierce might've been replaced by Ray Lewis on the field for Ray's final snap, which that's another excellent cool point. Memory he can bring to the table here.
Yes.
But that was one of those set it up for Ray.
Yeah.
One of those very cool moments. Well, we're watching the game. We're on the opposite sideline from the Ravens. We're watching a game across. And we see Ray Lewis has got his helmet on. I'm thinking at first, I'm thinking, why has Ray got his helmet on? Oh, he's coming in the ball game. That means so.
And I can tell you from television, what I saw was literally, as soon as the ball was snapped, Ray started dancing. Like there was the camera just went.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right to Ray starting to dance. And then, of course, his last ride, you know, was going to have another chapter. And that was, of course, the Mile High Miracle, Ken, which if I recall listening to you in the past, you were in attendance.
Yep. Yep. We were there. It was very cold that day.
Wow.
Lots of stories from that game that we don't need to go into. But we walked out with an entire box of programs. And there's some disenchanted, obviously, Broncos fan, a woman who said who was just pissed off at the fact that I was carrying off a bunch of programs and picked like 10 of them out and took them and threw them in the trash. I still had like, you know, 75, but she made me feel bad for wasting those.
And I'm sure those are hermetically sealed somewhere. It's somewhere.
Somewhere, yes. Somewhere. All right. let's
well, speaking of the Mile High Miracle, not much from the Bernard Pierce perspective. 5 carries, 14 yards, no receiving targets, not a surprise there. But that was Ray Rice was so good in that game. 30 carries, 131 yards and a touchdown. But of course, it wasn't about Ray Rice. It was about the haymakers that Denver was landing, the punt return kickoff, the opening kickoff in the third quarter, return for a touchdown, and you know, Corey Graham's interception and Peyton Manning's lack of mobility. And it was really, really cold. Hello, oversimplification. You know, that game had so much going on. It's not so relevant for our particular episode, but he was there.
it's a great for those reasons. And by the way, all rabbit holes are fine on this program. So if we're talking about Bernard Pierce and we get to start talking about the Mile High Miracle, that's fine. The AFC Championship game.
Yes. I was very fortunate as someone who's lived in New England since the year 2000. And the year before had gone to Rhode Island to watch the 2011 AFC Championship game with a buddy of mine who I had gone to Gilman School with, although I did graduate from Friends. So I need to make that clear distinction. And the heartbreak and the disappointment and the shock, literally the shock. Lee Evans gets stripped, / doesn't catch the ball. Billy Cundiff misses. To go from there to then flash forward a year later, and the Ravens had climbed that mountain. They just needed to get to the top. They were not quite at the very top. They hadn't planted their flag. And I was really fortunate to go with that same friend from Rhode Island, who's another Baltimorean, and my brother-in-law and another friend from high school. And believe me, there were a lot of Ravens fans in Foxborough that night. And we were also lucky because we happened to be on the Ravens side of the field. So when we get to the point where we start talking about the end of that game, it became Ravens North. It became Ravens Stadium North, which there's, I would imagine, and you've probably known this more than me because you've gone to more games than I have, but to be an opposition fan and to be celebrating a berth in the Super Bowl in the other team's stadium, to me,
nothing
that's
like
peak.
It.
That is peak fandom.
Honestly, any playoff game, you're ending the other team's season and you do it in their stadium. And the Ravens have done that a lot with their great road playoff record. And it's been fun to be there. I've been there for every single one of them. The only playoff game we've missed is the one at Buffalo during the pandemic. It's a special feeling. Occasionally you get somebody who tries to give some trouble to you, but it's never been so bad that I wouldn't want to keep doing it. Let's put it that way.
There you go. And you know, again, because of the peak, because of the valley of the year of literally 12 months before, to go back to this peak as we start talking about that game, I mean, especially when I had rewatched the AFC Championship game, you know, about 45 days ago as we were, you know, heading towards our own AFC Championship game this year, it was just a reminder that playoff games are hard. Playoff games are hard to win. Now just add Tom Brady and his swagger and his ability. And, you know, I think they were missing Gronk, if I recall that game. So Aaron Hernandez was the only tight end of the two. But Wes Welker absolutely tore us apart with punt returns and catches over the middle and all that good stuff. And whether we like him or whether you like him or whether the league likes him, you know, Bernard Pollard changed the game.
Yep.
Bernard Pollard and his hit. And that fumble just changed everything. But for the Ravens to come back from being down 13-7 at the half, it could have been a lot worse. It probably should have been a lot worse at the end of the first half. It was very sweet. Of course, what happened 2 years later was pretty bitter with the with blowing a 14-point lead in Foxborough. Again, very glad I wasn't there for that one. Having said that, this particular night, will live long in the memory.
And they played 4 games in Foxborough. And I meant to ask you if you were at the 2009 game.
I was. Mark Clayton dropped a 4th down, I believe, on the sideline to keep that drive going.
That's the regular season game.
Oh, no. So sorry. Game. Yes, I was at the regular season game. I was at a, I watched that playoff game in a friend's house here on Cape Cod, major Patriots fan. We literally sat down, we turned the game on, and Ray Rice ran 87 yards, roughly.
Yep.
And I think I thought I broke my hand because I was slamming my hand so hard on his granite kitchen counter. And he was like, and I'm yelling and screaming, and he's like, what's happening? And I'm like, Ray Rice is scoring a touchdown. And, you know, because they just felt like it was another ascension, that the Patriots were just going to ascend as they had in the previous season, even though we know what happened that Super Bowl. But you were there for that one too, Ken.
Yes, I was there for that one. They saw him run the ball 52 times. It was a great day. Flacco only threw the ball 10 times. That was another very, very cold day in New England. Not as cold as Mile High Miracle, but it was in the teens. And it doesn't get cold. One other thing I really love to see when we go on the road to watch football is to just hear local radio after the game and hear them whine about the loss and whatnot. And, you know, basically all the complaints are about the lack of toughness for the Patriots. And, you know, they need to get some football players back in here after that 2009, well, actually, you know, 1-1-10 or 1-10-10, that playoff loss. And people were bitter. A lot of Patriots fans, as you mentioned, in terms of the ascension thing, they're like, oh, I'll go to the AFC Championship game. I'm not going to go to a stupid wild card game. Why would I want to go to that? You know, titled.
And the Ravens, who cares? They got a young coach. They got this guy from Delaware. You know, what's he all about? I would also say, I think that particular playoff game was a classic, the Mike Tyson, you know, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth game.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, you get punched in the mouth the best way you know, the only way an opposition team can punch another team in the mouth is to run the first play for a touchdown. And as I recall, there was a big special teams. There was a big fumble, I want to say, in that first quarter by the Patriots special teams, which never really happened. Because, of course, you know, Belichick was a special teams coach. I'm pretty sure there was either a fumble or a turnover on a punt.
On a strip sack. You might be right. You might be right. In fact, I think the Ravens actually...
Because we were up 21-0, weren't we? Yeah.
24-0.
We were up 21.
Interception Landry, interception Reed, interception Carr. I've got one of those interceptions wrong. And then a fumble recovery by Suggs led to the 24-0 lead. So anyway. Got it.
Well, that was a sweet night. And no, I was at the regular season game that year, which when I was blabbing on about Mark Clayton dropping the ball on fourth down. But that was also quite tight. But I just, I do want to talk more about Bernard Pierce. And I will say that, you know, just as a quick statistical aside, you know, he was the leading carrier. He was the leading rusher for the Ravens in the AFC Championship game, from what I saw. 9 carries, 52 yards. He had a catch for 8 yards, which is a big deal for him. But as was common, he played about 30% of the snaps. Ray Rice played about 70% of the snaps. That's kind of how it went. But Ray, between the two of them, Ray Rice had 70 total yards. So you're talking 130 yards from your two running backs. I'm not going to count Vontae Leach, please. No disrespect, Vontae.
Sure.
You know, we already talked about the first half, but I would say the couple of carries and the couple of possessions that stuck out to me was, especially in the second half, there was that famous jump, the Bolden jump pass touchdown, to make it 21-13. So late in the third quarter, he had a big first down. We were talking about my memories of him coming through in clutch situations. 3rd and 2, New England 36, he runs 11 yards. And he runs the next play on 1st and 10 for 6 yards. And pretty soon after that, Bolden's in the end zone, and it's 21-13. And then comes the Bernard Pollard knockout on Stephen Ridley in the very next possession. And we go up 28-13. And then, you know, it got a little unsettled after that, if you recall, and got a little like, wait, is Tom Brady going to do Tom Brady things here? Because there was still time left in the game. And then, of course, Ellerby had his interception. And then there was one big drive left for the Ravens. We're in the fourth quarter now. They were at 6:49, used almost to the 2-minute warning. He only had one carry. But it was for 5 yards. And between him, Vontae Leach, and Ray Rice, they ran 9 plays, all rushing plays. So, you know, we can go back in the time machine and say, here's a playoff game where John Harbaugh ran as running backs. Sorry, Ken, I had to stick that one out there because I'm still holding on a little bit to some stuff after the KC game this year. Anyway, but the Ravens, of course, basically pushed everything down to that 2-minute warning. And then Kerry Williams, when Kerry Williams intercepted that ball in that end zone on the Ravens, sort of in that, I was literally in that corner on the Ravens sideline. I was jumping up and down and just really, I was in shock because again, think about where we had been 365 days earlier. And those two contrasting emotions are the good and the bad about why we follow and love sports. But that redemption story of the 2012 Ravens and what they had to go through to become Super Bowl champions is what I hope for is what's going to happen in 2024.
You know, it's a great point, and it's one that Ravens fans ought to really take to heart because there's a couple of things I can tell you about the 2024 team. They will not be as good as the 2023 team because the 2023 team is the most balanced and best Ravens team of all time. And that includes the 2006 and 2019 teams who had devastating finishes similarly. They're better than the 2000 team. They're way better than the 2012 team, which is probably the worst of those first five years of the Harbaugh-Flacco era. It's just you don't always win when you have the best team. And next year they're going to have to struggle to win, and hopefully they get back to the playoffs and maybe even win the division. But you know, the biggest thing is they get a lottery ticket into the playoffs and they have a chance then to play playoff football.
Yeah, that's really it. I mean, again, I would like a parallel in terms of the losing in the AFC Championship game and then making it to the Super Bowl. But I certainly recognize the 11 Ravens versus the 12 Ravens. I would say the amount of differences were probably way less than what will be the 23 Ravens versus the 24 Ravens.
Probably. The 11 team was significantly better than the 12 team. If you look at things like
I don't disagree, and, yeah. But totally don't. And I totally respect the statistical analyses on all those things. But in terms of the meat of that team and the people that, especially the veterans that stayed on to really drive them forward. And then they added in a Justin Tucker, they added in a Bernard Pierce, they added in a Courtney Upshaw, they added in a Kelechi Asemele. So recognizing that they also had some losses, it was that gut punch. I mean, how is there a worse way to lose a playoff game than you drop the winning touchdown and miss the overtime tying kick.
You know, it was a pretty bad double in that regard. It's much worse than just a single play or a single poor officials call or this or that that keeps you out of the Super Bowl. But it was a nightmare scenario.
It was. But I would like to talk about something slightly more happy because I sort of have one little game left, Super Bowl 47. And I just want to spend maybe one or two quick conversations about what happened in that game. You know, again, another complimentary game. You know, Ray Rice was 20 for 59 and 4 catches, and he played 72% of snaps. Our guy, Bernard Pierce, was only 12 for 33 and played 30% of snaps. So that was sort of on par. But in the second quarter, to lead to Dennis Pitta's touchdown to make it 14-3, he had the first three carries of that drive. 5 yards, 4 yards, 3 yards, get a first down and get the Ravens moving. And after a nice pass to Pitta, there was a second and one for a first down. Then Ed Dixon pulled a couple rabbits out of Ed Dixon's hat. By the way, he would be a good selection for this, for this series. And Ed Dixon, of course, led to the big touchdown to make it 14-3. I have to say, Ken, part of the fun of doing this was I had to relive the fake field goal in the Super Bowl.
Oh yeah.
Which I hadn't thought about in a long time. And I just wanted to bring that up because it was not a short one. As you recall, it was 4th and 9 from the San Francisco 14. And Justin Tucker almost made it, but he got shoved out of bounds. Yes. 1 yard short. So
Patrick, and that was us leading. Willis, seven,
we were
was on the field.
Yeah, and we were up 14-3. You know, field goal. It was a short field goal, 33 yards, 34 yards. Would have made it 17-3. John, I guess they saw something they liked, as they say, in the formation. However, just to mention one of the things we talked about earlier, as we get to the second half, Ray Rice did fumble in the Super Bowl, and it did lead to a field goal, which cut the lead to 28-23. And the biggest possession, as I recall, from one of the biggest possessions of the entire Super Bowl was the next possession. End of the third quarter into the beginning of the fourth quarter, the Ravens score for the first time since Jacoby Jones ran the opening kickoff back and got a Justin Tucker field goal to make it 31-23. And Bernard Pierce got the first two carries of that drive, got 7 yards between. But then the last play of the third quarter at 3rd-and-1 from the San Francisco 26, left end Bernard Pierce, 8 yards.
Oh, okay. So there was another 3rd-and-1 on that drive that went to Bolden. They checked out of the play. I thought that's what you were going to tell me about, but that is another big first.
It's a Bernard Pierce episode, Ken. What are you talking about? I'm teasing. You know, I'm kidding. You ask for obsessive Ravens fans, you know, this is what you get. So,
great job on this. Really appreciate talking to you about this.
Thanks.
Where can folks talk football with you on Twitter if they want to?
At Will Rubenstein on Twitter. And I just want to say, Ken, as a Ravens fan who does not live in Maryland anymore, but still has lots of family and friends there, I so appreciate your work. I so appreciate listening to what you do and what you provide day to day, week to week, and, you know, off season to off season. It's really a pleasure to listen to you and to get to know you and to do this together for all Ravens fans, no matter where you live.
Well, I hope a lot of other people will take your lead here and join in on this series, because that's the fun of the offseason, is meeting new people who, you know, it's fun to record content with. And sometimes it's a lot of the way I meet new people who I want to go back to the well more than once with is to meet them on a show like this. But we'll really appreciate you taking the time. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on this show and you have a player in mind, specifically, I'm going to put out a tweet relating to about 15 players from before 2000. That I'd like to do a show on. If you have good memory from that era and you want to talk about that, you know, the players from that era, James Jones, Derek Alexander, Michael Jackson, Orlando Brown. If you want to talk about those players, love to have you on for that. And DMs are always open. Hit me up on Twitter with a guy you want, and I'll get back to you very quickly. We'll schedule that. Will, thanks again for coming on. And we'll talk
to you next
time.
Thank you, Ken. It was a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.